Time to get the lowdown on some football at a couple of levels. He's the fine analyst. You can find him many places. Big Ten Network, NBC Sports, 670 The Score in Chicago. On Twitter, use the handle at Big Ant Heron. It's the Iowa Hawkeye from Bolingbrook, Illinois. Anthony Heron joins us. Been a while. Anthony, how are you and yours doing during the madness of 2021?
Steve, I am spectacular, my friend. Yes, it has been too long. Appreciate you having me on the show. I'm getting ready to cruise into this weekend. We had a good Friday so far. Took the toddler out because we got a good amount of snow here in Chicago. So I blew about as much helium into the tube as I could. We went out there and hit the slopes, went down some sledding hills, and had a good old time, man.
I'm jealous. I wish I was there. Over the past, I'd say 4 or 5 years, you know, you've been here to do Oregon games. You know, you got to see Justin Herbert play, practice, talk with the coaches. So, you know, what were your thoughts about his game when he was heading to the NFL versus how he actually played as a rookie? Because I didn't see him rewriting the rookie record books.
Yeah, man, I mean, the talents of Justin Herbert, like you referenced, I've called as many hit games as anyone at the college level, and the physical gifts just jumped off the page, just marvel at him when you watch him on the screen and see him in person, and then when you're around him as a person, you see a guy who certainly seems to take the craft really seriously, and was a student of the game. Was in a couple of different systems there in Eugene, trying to get things figured out, battled some injuries early in his career. And as he was sort of transitioning, going through the NFL draft process, one thing that that concerned me was that during his career at Oregon, I know Ducks fans, saw it play out in a lot of detail, where you didn't necessarily see those physical traits and what seemed special about him with the arm talent and the mobility. And frankly, he's an extremely accurate passer, always has been, but it was really the touch on the deep ball, the anticipation of throws, that I wondered, okay, how quickly will he be able to transition into doing that at a high level as an NFL quarterback, because that ends up being so important in a lot of NFL systems. And really, that was, to me, the touch on the deep ball that he displayed as a rookie went beyond anything I anticipated we'd see from Justin Herbert early in his career, because it was something he mechanically struggled with a lot throughout his career at Oregon. And, like I referenced, the systems that he ran while he was there at school, there were a couple of different ones that he was in, and I think that maybe it didn't always take advantage of what Justin Herbert could bring to the table, what he could do with deeper passes, with the touch pass down the field, and asking some of those things of him. And we got to the National Football League, man, and he didn't have to be the day one starter, which I was hoping was going to be the case for him. And there's not many better quarterbacks who he could have sort of studied behind initially than Tyrod Taylor. And then at whatever point he came in the lineup, he really, really took off and just sailed through his rookie year. And we'll see, how quickly he really is able to start winning games. But, man, I think you think back to his true freshman season at Oregon and the numbers he put up back then, I think the expectations were even higher for how his career would sort of wind up statistically during his time in Eugene. So we'll see. I'm so happy for the rookie season he was able to put together statistically. Now from here, it'll be about that franchise with the Chargers, making sure they surround him with the coaching staff, with the system, with the defense, with the offensive line, that can fully take advantage of one of the best young signal callers in the National Football League.
Now, obviously, along those lines, the time you've spent here the last 3 or 4 years, Mario Cristobal's been the head coach, and they just signed him to a nice extension. And obviously, when you get time to spend with the players, you're with the coaches, we know what he's already accomplished. How important do you think it was that the program locked him up kind of long-term based on what he's building here?
I'll tell you what, there's a comp that I've made where when you think of, for me, and as much as I've covered the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, the two conferences I've covered in the most depth and detail over the years, and at the time that Urban Meyer came to Ohio State University and took that program over, Ohio State was already the best team in the Big Ten. It's pretty much been the case for decades, as you know, But Urban Meyer came in and took things to another level. He really forced the issue on other Big Ten programs because he took Ohio State's recruiting and resources into another stratosphere, just with how they attack things, and it rivaled what we saw some of the programs in the SEC doing, and Mario Cristobal coming to Eugene. We see the way that they're putting recruiting classes together that rival some of the best teams in the country, and that, to me, is now showing dividends on the field. With all the opt-outs that the Ducks had over this past season, and guys going to the National Football League, and, of course, a shortened season, and obviously there were some different machinations that ended up thrusting them into the Pac-12 championship game, but they were there, and they won it again, and you see him just compiling talent and stacking recruits and going out and getting big-name coaches and going out and getting so those resources, not only the facilities and uniforms and the systems that are running being, you know, sort of modern and cool and clever and all those things that have been a part of Oregon, but to say that, you know what, we're going to make sure we're paying assistant coaches and having things, you know, to that level, that we're recruiting amongst the best in the country, not just the best in our division, not just the best in the Pac-12, but just stacking top five type recruiting classes on top of each other. So Mario Cristobal is really now, you know, we'll see. You know, this next season and a couple of seasons will be a big determining factor on how high a level it looks like Mario Cristobal is truly taking Oregon football. But there are things from an infrastructure standpoint and a recruiting standpoint, an assistant coaching standpoint, that now Oregon is right there on the same echelon with so many other programs around the country. And what has made Alabama and Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, some of those teams that really do it at the highest of levels, what makes them competitive at the national level year in and year out is what Mario Cristobal has sort of infused into the Oregon Ducks. And now the gauntlet is dropped to USC and to other programs around the Pac-12 to say, you know what, if you want to compete at that level, you got to come up here and do it at the level that these other programs are doing it at. And so now the other programs around the Pac-12 will have to follow suit. And I think that's because of a lot of what Mario Cristobal is bringing to the table there.
You know, I want to get a little closer to your home, a little NFL, assuming the Mitch Trubisky era is done in Chicago. I know Nick Foles is under contract. They have a first-round pick, which they hadn't because of the Khalil Mack trade. So this offseason, there's Matt Stafford available. So what's either the buzz or what's your gut telling you what we might see at quarterback for the Bears come 2021?
The thing that's going to be difficult for the Bears is that, you know, you mentioned Matthew Stafford as a quarterback, and so his name being out there on the trading block, and I'd say it's a mature decision by Stafford and Detroit to say that, you know, they're going to have this Gwyneth Paltrow-style conscious uncoupling where both sides are willing to move on from each other. But I think it's a decision that makes sense because Stafford is a quarterback. Like, you know, I was talking about the Chargers earlier, and I think Philip Rivers had a magnificent career with the Chargers, you know, most of that time in San Diego. But when you think about the consistency he had with coaching with that franchise, the talent that was around him on offense, and at times having the number one defense in football and great rushing attacks, it really feels like there should have been a higher level of winning, more seasons where he truly competed for a championship, got, you know, to the AFC title game more than once, made a Super Bowl or a couple of Super Bowls at some point. From the level of player, it seemed like Philip Rivers was, they didn't win at as high a level and certainly not as consistently as they could have or should have. So I look at Matthew Stafford, I'm like, man, I mean, I think if he would have had at least a percentage of what Philip Rivers was surrounded by, how good could he be? And Stafford still has the opportunity to pursue that in his prime. So I'm happy he's going to get the chance to get with a better organization, a better team than my old organization, the Detroit Lions. But I don't think it's going to be with the Bears. I don't think they're going to trade him within the division and have to see him twice a year. It's probably not what the Lions are going to be willing to do. You'll probably see him somewhere else in the NFC, maybe even preferably from Detroit's perspective, send him out to the AFC, and they'll be even less likely to see him throughout the season. But he is a really talented guy. He's been in a difficult circumstance. You know, I'm not saying I think Matthew Stafford is one of the top five quarterbacks in football, but he's going to upgrade the position for someone and probably play some of the best football of his career over the next few seasons.
You know, about Stafford, you could steal this stat. I heard it today. So Stafford has started 165 games for the Lions. just 11 times he's had a guy rush for 100 yards. And I thought, isn't that unbelievable? That's a telling statistic. We continue with football analyst Anthony Herron. One more thing on the Bears. I mean, their defensive coordinator, Chuck Pagano, retired. I mean, hey, in 2018, 2019, Chicago's defense was legit. Top five, more middle of the pack this year. So he's replaced from within by a young guy, an Ivy Leaguer, Sean Desai. I'm sure most people aren't familiar with him. What should they know about all he brings to the table?
Well, he's got a doctorate, and it's actually, he's been in the Bears franchise for, you know, not quite, but going on a decade in various capacities at this point. Last couple of seasons, he's coached their safeties, and for him, he's a guy who, he's got an acumen for just the sport of football in general, and, you know, it seems like he's maybe just the latest of this kind of new, fresh, younger crop of coaches getting their first head coaching opportunity around the National Football League. And in a similar fashion to maybe, you know, what we've come accustomed to in baseball, where there's a, you know, sort of an acumen for the sport. There's a studying, you know, the metrics that go into the sport of football and thinking about situational statistics and factoring that into personnel groupings, into schematics of how and when you call certain things against opponents. It goes beyond where perhaps some of the older coaches who are very skilled at it, but maybe trust their gut or trust their eyes in certain situations. I think there's a younger crop of coaches that's sort of combining those assets and, you know, recognizing what happens situationally while going into the games, you know, with a well-versed understanding of how statistics can really aid the way that you attack opponents. And those are the things that Sean Desai will bring to the table. And the Bears haven't been great, Steve, about evaluating and developing young player talent, and they really haven't been great about evaluating and developing young coaching talent here over the last, you know, let's call it 7 to 10 seasons. There's been times where assistant coaches like Brandon Staley, who's with the Chicago Bears, who's now out there, we were talking about the Chargers earlier, he very quickly in his NFL career has become a head coach. He was here with Chicago. And so I think Sean Desai is maybe the Bears trying to do a better job of recognizing young talent, not just from a player perspective and how do we develop and utilize that, which they've struggled, but also we've seen young coaches in Chicago who haven't necessarily been nurtured and promoted along the lines of what you would anticipate some of the talents that they've recognized internally and be able to promote from within. They're looking to do that with Sean Desai, and, you know, they could have tried to go the Wade Phillips route, an older guy who's a proven commodity as a defensive coordinator, but I respect the fact that they promoted from within, and we'll see if they make the right call here, but overall, it's a direction a lot more teams around the league are starting to go.
Couple final thoughts for Big Ant, Anthony Herron. As for the Super Bowl, covering the Bears, well, you had Tampa in town week 5, beat them on a late field goal, got Brady 3 times, somehow TB12 rebounded. And, you know, Anthony, I know it's easy to gush, but what about a 43-year-old against these younger... Let's face it, the defensive players now are all seems like they're heat-seeking missiles. Just to still play at this level and just add to this already unprecedented resume.
It's really remarkable, Steve, because I think for Tom Brady, what's underappreciated about his career, and I compare it to LeBron a bit, where you think back to the early portion of Tom Brady's success, where he was one style of quarterback. He was in a system in New England that had a lot of balance to it. You know, run to pass with the play calling. He was thought of as a game manager. He wasn't asked to use his right arm to really move the offense throughout the game. But he was tasked with keeping the game close and then making plays late, essentially to be in position for a game-winning field goal. And he did that on his way to several Super Bowls early in his career. Then things developed. The roster around him improved. He improved as a quarterback and as a passer. Then you saw some of those record-setting offenses throwing the deep ball to Randy Moss. You know, surprisingly enough, those were Super Bowls that he lost, where it was really more about the vertical pass. Then things sort of evolved again, where Tom Brady turned into these two tight end sets. And there was going to be get back to having more balance, run the pass. But utilizing versatility and motions and new tight ends and wide tight ends, and the NFL at large began morphing into that based off the success the Patriots had with their multi-tight end sets. Then it was the slot receivers everywhere, the quick passing attack. We didn't need the seven-step drop anymore. And now, transitioning to Tampa Bay, he sort of combined his system in recent years with what Bruce Arians does, getting back to some play-action passing, and still, like you referenced, at 43 years old, being able to utilize the vertical pass and some shot plays there. So the fact that he's still capable of that at this age is really astounding. But just the scope of Tom Brady's career is where I think that's where I compare him with LeBron. When you see guys who, for a couple of decades at this point, have been the dominant player in their sport, as the sport around them has evolved, they've been tasked with evolving with the sport. They've done it, not only done it effectively, but still been the best in the business and winning at the highest of levels, while their game is completely different now than it was early in their career. It's really, I mean, two players, some of the more remarkable accomplishments, because they haven't been able to be the same guy for the last, you know, 18 to 20 years, but it's been okay because they're both so great. They've evolved as the sport has and still been at the top of their game.
Mind-boggling. And lastly, this Patrick Mahomes fella who's trying to be the youngest quarterback ever to win two Super Bowls. I mean, you know, three seasons. He's been in the AFC title game. He's won the championship. He's back in the Super Bowl. I usually call him a wizard. But from the lens of a defensive player with that arm, his heart, his elusiveness, I mean, how do you at least try to limit the damage he does?
He's one of the most frustrating players for defenders in the National Football League, because you really get both ends of that spectrum, where Aaron Rodgers for a long time has been the most physically gifted quarterback we've ever seen, and obviously executes the acumen of the position pre-snap at a really high level also, and we just got done describing the level of winning. I mean, Tom Brady has played in, you know, like almost 20% of the Super Bowl of all time, over half of them just from the time he's been in the league for the last couple of decades here. And Patrick Mahomes is right now, and it is, to use your word, mind-boggling to think that he really is on an arc to combine the two, where he's got physical gifts that rival and perhaps even go beyond Aaron Rodgers, and he's winning at a Tom Brady-like level. So we may be just on the front end of witnessing, who knows what it'll be, a decade, 15 years, maybe 20 years of Patrick Mahomes being Tom Brady plus Aaron Rodgers, and being in an organization with maybe the best play caller in the National Football League. Who knows what he and this franchise will be able to accomplish here, as he is going to be the future of the NFL. So we just better sit back and enjoy this thing, man, because he's going to, like, if the Golden State Warriors, if the Dubs could have kept their thing rolling there in the Bay Area, I think this is exactly what the Chiefs are on the cusp of doing.
Good luck to everybody trying to stop him. Folks, he's Anthony Herron. Again, on Twitter, you can keep up at Big Ant Herron. My friend, I always appreciate your time and insight. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Wishing you and your little one happy sledding. Wishing you and your family health, happiness, and sanity during all this. And obviously, as another football season approaches, looking forward to catching up once again. Thanks a lot, Anthony. I really mean it.
No doubt about it, Steve. Really appreciate it, my friend. Have a great weekend.
All right, take it easy.